Welcome to Discovering Responsible Wealth. This is your host, Frank Angelos. Pleasure to be with you this week. Through this month, we've been talking about what we refer to as what will be your legacy month. And so on this week's show, what I wanted to address was memorializing and really documenting what your life's work, how it should be handled, how it should be distributed, and focusing on that. With that in mind, our guest today is Bob Munoz, estate and business attorney, partner over at Lamoro Davidson Law Firm in Freehold, New Jersey. So, Bob, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, Bob, you know, this whole topic of legacy planning and so forth, you know, we've been talking about it all month. And one of the things that we talk about is, you know, when we frame that conversation about legacy, your legacy is what your life represents up until this point in time, because that's how people remember you. But there will come a part that we're not here. And when we're not here, then it starts getting into what's your legacy beyond that, as far as, you know, how your family was treated, how the community was treated, and everything else. And so I know that you've had, you know, years of experience in this, and that you've been advising a lot of individuals, families, and business owners on how to plan their legacy. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about it, which is, you know, how are people documenting it? What are they doing? Because the worst thing that I've seen over the years is this, is that you have a family, they're close together, and then all of a sudden, you know, one of them or the parents pass, and then the kids never talk to each other again, because there was no clear direction on what should happen, how things should be done, and so there's a big void there, and then there's hard feelings.
Well, that's a result oftentimes when documents are not clear. So how it's structured will depend upon what it is that the person was doing during their lifetime. For example, if we have people who had jobs and their legacy is the wealth they've created in terms of investment and things of that nature, we'll treat that differently than someone who has an ongoing business, in which case we may have to look at the business itself and who's going to remain in that business. Or if it's been a semi-business, semi-investment legacy, which would be sort of someone who's accumulated real estate, for example, rental real estate. So I have clients who have all combinations of those things and whose solutions are different depending on what they want to have happen with their wealth, as well as what they want to have happen with amongst their children, and maybe in some cases grandchildren. And sometimes those things can be such a mix of assets. For example, you could have a client who has multiple buildings in New York City and a farm. And those are two different statements. Mm-hmm. And two different types of things. So trying to make those things work together is a challenge. But it has to be handled in a way that reflects what the parents want to see happen with the children. And, of course, sometimes we have situations where the children, A, get along fine, B, appear to get along fine, but they don't after mom and dad are gone, or they didn't get along ever. So we have to face all that. And hopefully when the clients are meeting with us, they're honest about the problems that we have to face in the future so that we can put something in the documents to control that.
So when we talk about documents, and it was interesting, I had a recent meeting with one of my clients, and we were having a conversation, and there were changes in one of their parents' estate documents in the later years. And, you know, the changes effectively disinherited one of the kids. And it was interesting, but that child didn't know they were disinherited. They don't know why they were disinherited. And so it's interesting, but there's sometimes that lack of communication even that goes on, that, you know, the intention of why something is done. And then what happens is it's like, well, was the person manipulated into making a change by one of the other kids? And then you get those hard feelings. So one of the things I wanted to ask you a little bit about is there ways that people can kind of protect themselves and protect their assets, okay, and try to keep the family together, by maybe not having a simple document that could be changed with one signature, but maybe there's some additional planning that could go around there that actually makes that legacy really stand out as to, you know, what it should have been in the first place?
Having people manipulated as they get older is a situation we face all the time. Oddly enough, I recently had a situation where the parent wanted to make a change and disinherit one of the children, and yet I am absolutely sure that both children would have been surprised. And my suspicion was that the parent was not, may not be competent, okay, in the meeting that I had with the parent. But you do have those types of issues. I find that preventing manipulation is best done through a trust mechanism. If I'm really concerned about that, I can have a trust where it requires more than one signature. Disinheriting a child is a conversation I often have with parents because I try to indicate to them that that's the last statement they ever make. So assuming they reconcile before their death and they haven't had the opportunity to change their will, then that is what will happen. And it's very, very dicey in terms of what ends up happening otherwise. What ends up happening is what becomes sort of a lawyer's dream, litigation. And when litigation occurs, it makes the law firms representing the people involved the real beneficiaries of the estates of the parents. And so giving a clear statement is important. Making sure that the child understands why the action might have been taken is important. Most times I think everybody knows. The relationship has had a major breakdown. But a lot of other times it does come as a surprise, and oftentimes it could be through manipulation. And it's the lawyer's job to make sure that the manipulation is not going on. That doesn't mean it won't happen anyway. I refuse to make changes twice for a client. The niece took her to another attorney, and they called me and said, "You didn't do this work, Bob. There's a reason." And I said, "I don't think that's what she wants." And they said, "We didn't either. We just wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page." And then she took her apparently to a third lawyer who was willing to do the work. And I got a call 2 years after that, when the woman passed away, asking me why I didn't do the work. And so it can happen, and people can shop people around. And trying to make sure you have good people and making good selections of people that are going to control your documentation is important. That's why sometimes using co-agents on powers of attorney is better than having just one agent.
You know, Bobby, you mentioned the term trust, and on our show we've talked in the past about, you know, somebody should get a will done and, you know, make sure you have your documents in place. Maybe just take a little bit of time and explain what a trust is, because it's a document that someone could do while they're alive, and they can actually see how it works. They can see how things are managed, and they can, you know, it's like taking a car for a ride a little bit. They can actually get to, you know, get a feel of it a little bit throughout their lifetime. So maybe spend a little time and just explain the concept of a trust and how it's utilized.
Well, trust is an agreement between a person creating the trust, the grantor, and the trustee, the person who is going to be responsible for the assets they're placed in the trust. But there are a full panoply of types of trusts. There are inter vivos trusts, which are trusts that you create during your lifetime, and there are testamentary trusts, which are created by will. Most people have trusts in their will because they're usually providing for children or grandchildren, or we have special needs trusts and wills. But the type you're talking about would be of the inter vivos variety during their lifetime. And then there are two different types of trusts, main categories of trusts within that inter vivos. And one would be living trusts or revocable trusts, which can be changed, and irrevocable trusts that theoretically cannot be changed, but in practicality can be changed under certain circumstances, but depending on the drafting of the document. So a living trust, we don't use them as much in New Jersey, but living trusts have a role in New Jersey or in many other states. For example, if I have a client who's moving to Florida, I have them create a living trust before they go. They buy their property there because probate is, in my mind, more difficult in Florida than it is here in New Jersey. However, in New Jersey, we use it when people have property in another state, when they need someone to manage their property for them, or there's some special circumstances. So the kinds of circumstances we're talking about, the living trust might have a role for someone living in New Jersey where they can try it out and see how it works, and they can easily amend it. I've actually used living trusts for clients who are habitual will changers, and it's easier to change a trust than it is to do a will, a codicil to a will. And if a will has so many codicils, after a while it almost becomes a joke. So using a trust mechanism is much better, because then I can send them the document, they can sign it, the change is instantaneous, rather than having to come in and go through the process that a will requires. So it does have a role, and I think you're correct. You can test drive a trust, a living trust, and see if it works for you.
That's great. And, you know, it's interesting is, you know, one of the things that I've also noticed, you know, when we talk about legacy and so forth is, you know, you have people that, you know, they're on this board with this organization, they're on a hospital board here, they're involved with the church here. So they're involved in all the community and, you know, organizations out there. And one of the things that I notice is that their legacy is the work that they've done there throughout their lifetime. But then what happens is that person passes, and oftentimes those organizations are not a part of the will, they're not a part of the trust. And so, you know, one of the things that I bring up to people is, if it was important to you throughout your lifetime, is it still important to you beyond that? And in which case, you know, should that be written into documents? And I don't know how much you're seeing people do that or not, but, you know, it's certainly a topic for people to consider.
I've seen people be it seems to me the trend is away from charity nowadays, because people's lives are so uncertain, and the amount of wealth they think their children are going to have during their lifetime is so speculative, because we live in a different age. However, it's not unusual for people with substantial wealth to place in their documents an opportunity for charitable giving to be done. So I have a client who has properties all over the country. Their legacy is they are in the real estate business. It is the family business. It wasn't what they did. They did the old start buying properties kind of thing.
Yep.
And now they own many rental properties throughout the country. And they have carved into their trust for their children. They have what we call a dynasty trust that goes from generation to generation. The opportunity for the trustees to sprinkle some of that money into charity with the discussions with their children, who live all over the world. We actually discussed, and they have in mind certain charitable intentions and a certain amount that they will do to carry on the things they've done during their lifetime.
That's great. So, you know, one of my things, you know, as we're bringing it up on the show is, you know, we know that we have a lot of, you know, people that are very faith-oriented, and, you know, my thing is like, you know, you have an opportunity in your estate planning, and when you're thinking in terms of what's your legacy, to really document that, and that's why we're having this conversation today. The other thing that I thought was interesting is I've run across people from time to time that, you know, they do their wills, they do their, you know, their trusts and so forth, but then something that I'm hearing that's becoming more popular is, and they do those two documents, but then it's common that they put like a family letter with it as well. Have you been finding that much?
That
conversation?
We've done some of those. It gives them an explanation of why they're doing things and what they want for their family. It's becoming more common. People are doing more of that. Just going back to the faith giving, I find people still give money to their churches and to the religious organizations. When I was talking about charities, I was talking about other types of charities.
Gotcha.
But many people leave some money to their church or faith-based. And I'd say that 90% of all charitable gifts that we deal with clients are probably going to churches and things of that nature. But going back to the other issue, doing the letter is a really interesting way to handle things. I think it kind of is a nice way of saying, of leaving something for your children, your last words, as opposed to the last words that we talked about, which is just a cold will.
Right, exactly.
And some of the things that you want and that you're thinking. I know that I personally had done one when my children were very young and put it with my will, because I wanted them, if something happened to me when they were young, I wanted them to know who I was and what I saw for them. Now my children are older, and my one son has a son, so it's a little bit different. We've had discussions about these things, but it is a nice way to put forth what you saw about them, because not all the time. I don't think all the time we say everything we're supposed to say, and it's always nice to find that time to say those things. But sometimes you don't, and maybe doing a letter, giving some ideas or guidance to your children or your other beneficiaries is a great opportunity for you to to put that expression forward to them.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, that we live in a time where, you know, information is instant. It's a very fast-paced society typically that we live in. And that ability to just slow down and give some direction almost to say is, you know, here's how I viewed the world. Here's how I felt about different things. Here's how, you know, why I believe certain things. And it's, you know, generationally, years ago, what would happen is we didn't have TV. We weren't sitting in front of computers. So what would happen is families would be together and they would talk and they would have stories and you would go on and you'd be able, you'd know everything going on in the family.
Yes, you would have dinner together.
Exactly. Right. Nowadays, it's that fast pace where you don't have it. And that connection, you know, starts to drift and it's like, I don't remember Grandma so-and-so or, you know, anything about it. And so, you know, part of, you know, my bringing that up was is I just thought it was an interesting way to help document that. And you even have with technology, you could record it, you could video it. It's very different.
Yeah, there are all ways to do it, lots of ways to do it. And it does keep a family legacy in terms of historical dimension. It's hard for my children to understand the world that I was in when I was very young. I was in a world that was had very rich cultures because of the diversity of my background, but they don't see that today. They only see one particular type of background, and it's important for them to understand who you are and where you came from.
Very good. So for all of our listeners, we've been discussing really how to memorialize and document your life and your legacy. Our guest today has been Robert Munoz, state planning attorney and partner over at Lamora Davidson. And as we're wrapping up, Bob, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
This has been Frank Congelos, your host, and you've been listening to Discovering Responsible Wealth. If you have any questions, you could reach us at the Institute of Responsible Wealth, 2431 Atlantic Avenue, Manasquan, New Jersey, 08736, or email us at info@iofrw.com. Thank you and have a blessed week.